The final decision is in on the Carter case, and the news is not good.
This is a very wide decision, so it's more egregious. It's worse than we expected it would be. It's a very serious problem.
Some perspectives today on the Supreme Court of Canada ruling with respect to assisted suicide. We also look back at a good news court case, the Nova Scotia Supreme Court ruling in the Trinity Western situation. In fact, that's our feature interview for today. Lighthouse News has a new widget on the website designed to increase interaction with you. And the issue of doctors' conscience rights is back in the spotlight, this time in Saskatchewan.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
The Supreme Court of Canada has finally handed down its decision in the so-called Carter case. That case, which originated in British Columbia, was an appeal against Section 241 of the Criminal Code. That section, just so we're all clear on the context of what this decision was all about, reads as follows. Everyone who A. counsels a person to commit suicide, or B. aids or abets a person to commit suicide, is guilty of an indictable offense and liable to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 14 years. Section B, in other words, made it illegal for anyone, including doctors, to help someone kill themselves. This is a bit of an oversimplification, but basically the Supreme Court struck down that section as unconstitutional because, in the opinion of the judges, the restriction was an unreasonable infringement on the rights of individuals to make decisions about how their lives would end. Alex Schadenberg is with the Euthanasia Prevention Coalition, which was one of the interveners before the High Court, trying to keep the existing law in place. He says the Carter ruling didn't just strike down Section B. The decision actually opened the door to widespread euthanasia by not keeping any restrictions in place in any circumstances at all.
It allows euthanasia, it allows assisted suicide, it allows it for both physical and psychological suffering. It uses definitions that are vague. It's a very serious problem, and I'm really hoping that the federal government does a strong act of at least providing some serious protections for all Canadians.
Schadenberg says this ruling, if it's not tempered by some guidance from Parliament, puts us on a slippery slope towards some very extreme interpretations of the so-called right to die.
When you look at the decision as to who can qualify, I'll give you a prime example. It says you must have a grievous and irremediable medical condition, including an illness, disease, or disability. Obviously, that's not a terminal illness. And right off the bat, there's lots of people with disabilities who have these conditions. So it's not limiting it in any way. It's not trying to say it's only for those who are dying. And further to that, it says enduring suffering that is intolerable to the individual and the circumstance. It's very subjective. It's not based on a condition. It is based on, I believe I am suffering. So when you do that, you instantly then open the door to what's been going on in Belgium, in the Netherlands, which is a woman saying, even though she's not physically ill, she's gone blind, and she says, being blind is too great a level of psychological suffering for me, therefore I want euthanasia, and she dies by euthanasia.
Others are concerned, too. Dr. Catherine Ferrier heads the Physicians Alliance Against Euthanasia. She says the decision marks a sad day for Canada.
I look after very elderly patients, people who are at risk of coercion if this takes effect. I think that there are many other ways that the problems of suffering at the end of life could have been dealt with without removing the protection of the law on vulnerable patients.
And the disabled community is also worried that this ruling, which overturned an earlier Supreme Court decision in the so-called Rodriguez case, could create situations where doctors could order the deaths of disabled people based solely on their disabilities. Amy Hasbrook is with the Council of Canadians with Disabilities.
We are extremely discouraged because 20 years ago, the Rodriguez Court said that the discrimination against people with disabilities that is apparent in society puts people at risk. Yet this court has decided that apparently that discrimination isn't important enough to protect people with disabilities.
The court gave the government a year to come up with an amendment to the law, in essence to replace Section B with something else which might somehow limit the completely unrestricted right to assisted suicide. No one is clear on what that might look like, but many people agree that Parliament does need to look at this. Even the NDP's justice critic, Françoise Bauvin, who's been generally supportive of the so-called right-to-die movement, concedes that parliamentarians will need to take a look at this.
Do we need to strike completely to 41, partially? Those are all discussions that I think we need. Now we have no choice. The Supreme Court of Canada sent us back to do our job and to make sure that we address the issue of 241. If nothing happens in a year, 241 will be gone. So is it what people want? That is going to be part of the discussion in the months to come.
Federal Justice Minister Peter McKay issued a written statement after the Supreme Court ruling came down, promising that there will be a parliamentary review. Quoting from his statement, "This is a sensitive issue for many Canadians," he says. "We will study the decision and ensure all perspectives on this difficult issue are heard." So what is your perspective on this decision? Do you have any questions about it or suggestions on how it might be dealt with? We've got a new tool on our website for you to make your views known. Brian Grimm is the new executive producer of Lighthouse News. He's also the president of the ARPA board.
We figured that the listeners might have some questions that they want to ask. We thought this would be another tool in the tool belt for getting feedback to us. In addition to the email, there's also the voicemail now. So they just click the answering machine button on the Lighthouse News webpage and they'll be able to record a message for us.
That's right. Click the voicemail button on our Lighthouse News homepage. And assuming you've got an onboard microphone or headset on your computer, you can leave your comment or question. We'd really like you to do this because in 2 weeks we plan to do a more detailed analysis of the Carter decision, bringing Andre Schouten and some other bright minds to the table to talk about next steps in this case. And we'd like to know what you think those next steps should be. Brian Grimm says this new website widget will be a permanent fixture for Lighthouse News as a way to increase the options you have for input and feedback on this program.
Part of our mission is to educate, equip, and encourage Christians to political action. And with the ability to interact in this way, we feel that it might help them with their task of engaging in the public square. So if there's an issue that they want to pursue or a question that they have about a broadcast that they just listened to, they'll be able to just quickly send a quick note to us. You know, if they don't want to email, they can just send a voicemail to us.
Again, just go to the Lighthouse News homepage. Look at the very top line, and you'll see the button that says Answering Machine. Please keep your comments brief so we can use them as part of the show. The Carter case wasn't the only judicial ruling to hit the news in the past couple of weeks. There was also another one in Nova Scotia, where a judge threw out an attempt by the Law Society there to refuse to recognize graduates from Trinity Western University's proposed new law school. The benchers there didn't like Trinity's so-called community covenant, in which students at the school commit to abstain from sexual activity outside of heterosexual marriage. The reasons for the decision were twofold. In the first instance, the judge said that the Law Society completely overstepped the bounds of its authority by basically trying to regulate the practices of a law school in another province. But the second half of the ruling went to the issue of so-called conflicting rights. Do the rights of the homosexual community trump the freedom of religion guarantees in the charter? The judge said no. Alberto's Palazagopoulos was one of the lawyers intervening in the case. He was there on behalf of a group called Christian Higher Education Canada. And he says the decision included some very, very positive language affirming the rights of Christians to express their faith publicly.
They confirm the status of the law with respect to religious communities and organizations. The judge acknowledges that students at Trinity Western University study law as Christians. So they're first and foremost Christians, and they're law students second to that. And so that's an incredibly helpful piece of language for us because it acknowledges in law that faith is not just something we put on our sleeve. It's not just a badge. It actually defines who we are as individuals.
Andre Schouten, ARPA's legal counsel, also presented arguments in the case. And I'll be talking to him about the decision on the feature interview portion of the program coming up in a few minutes. One other story today, conscience rights for doctors. The issue has come up again, this time in Saskatchewan, where the College of Physicians and Surgeons has come out with a draft policy. Mike Schouten with We Need a Law says the Saskatchewan draft policy is even more wide-ranging than what's being proposed in Ontario, where the proposal is that doctors will be forced to refer patients for procedures which they find personally objectionable.
It's not just a request that all doctors need to refer, but it's also, if there is no other doctors around, they will be forced to participate in the acts of abortion and euthanasia.
Shuten says this really comes down to a clash of worldviews, and he says the evidence shows there's actually an agenda behind this whole movement to take away conscience rights for doctors.
When it comes to the move away from a Judeo-Christian ethos, we have a very secular society who does not just want all Canadians to recognize and accept that certain things have changed in regards to family and morality, but they want all Canadians to participate in the celebration of those changes. And they're not going to be content until all Canadians do, in fact, celebrate that. And if there's resistance, specifically by Christians or people of different moral persuasion, then they're going to coerce them into celebrating those seemingly progressive actions. We have a group of very pro-abortion, pro-euthanasia professors who have been pushing their weight around trying to get conscience protection policies changed across the country, and most recently in Ontario and here in Saskatchewan. They first attempted to do so at the Canadian Medical Association. They were pretty much rebuked there, and then they took their ideas to provincial regulatory bodies, and these are the College of Physicians and Surgeons.
There is one bright spot in all of this, in a sense, and it goes back to the ruling in the Carter case. Most people overlooked it, but there is a line in that Supreme Court ruling, and I'm going to quote it. It says, "Nothing in the Declaration of Invalidity, which we propose to issue, would compel physicians to provide assistance in dying." So is that the thin edge of a potential wedge that could be the basis for a legal challenge against this idea of taking away doctors' conscience rights?
I'm not a lawyer, but I have looked to a few lawyers for their thoughts on this, and it seems to be a silver lining in the Carter case. Doctors would not be forced to go against their conscience to participate in euthanasia or assisted suicide. So I suspect that this will be challenged here in Saskatchewan as well as in Ontario based on what the Supreme Court said. And it is my hope that if it's challenged at the euthanasia and assisted suicide level, that it would also be challenged at the other end of the spectrum of life when it comes to preborn human rights and abortion.
Shuten says the other possible outcome in both Saskatchewan and Ontario is that doctors will simply give up their practices and move somewhere else, putting an increasing strain on the healthcare system. Back with more after this.
Do you have a question about Canadian news or politics that you would like answered on air? We would love to hear from you. Go to arcacanada.ca/lighthousenews and click on Answering Machine to leave us a brief message. Please keep your message to 90 seconds or less. When leaving a message, please start with your name and where you're calling from. Visit arcacanada.ca/lighthousenews and tune in to hear answers to your questions and much more on Lighthouse News.
And we're back on the program. As you heard on the news portion, a major ruling from the Supreme Court in Nova Scotia last month with respect to Trinity Western University. Andre Shuten, ARPA's legal counsel, was before that court earlier this year arguing that particular case. And Andre, there were two basic parts of the ruling, one of them dealing with jurisdiction and the other dealing with sort of the conflicting rights question. Run through a little bit what the judge said.
Sure, thanks, Al. So the first part of the judgment focuses on administrative law jurisdiction. It's a much more complicated and technical discussion, but in that section, basically the judge ruled that the Nova Scotia Barrister Society had absolutely no jurisdiction to try to regulate the behavior or the internal policies of a law school that's in a totally different jurisdiction. Trinity Western is obviously in British Columbia. And the judge ruled that basically what the Nova Scotia Barrister Society was doing was trying to create a crafty way of imposing their moral values onto a law school that is in a different jurisdiction, something they just didn't have the right to do. So just on that technical level, the Nova Scotia Barrister Society lost and Trinity Western won. On the other question, the question of balancing rights, which is a much bigger, broader constitutional question, there too the judge ruled in favor of Trinity Western, and he said that it's unconstitutional, it violates the freedom of religion of Trinity Western, of its students, of its entire supporting community, for Nova Scotia to try to say because some people within the LGBT community might possibly be offended about a community covenant all the way out in Trinity Western's law school in BC, that it's unreasonable to suggest that by banning students from that law school in BC that they're in any way going to balance religious freedom rights with equality rights of the LGBT community. So in the end, the judge ruled in favor of Trinity Western on both levels, a huge victory for religious freedom.
There were some pretty stark quotes in the judgment. I didn't read the whole thing. It's fairly lengthy, but just in the first 7 or 8 pages of sort of the basis for the judgment, there was some pretty strong language used. Anything stand out for you?
It's a wonderful judgment. I think most of our listeners would quite enjoy reading the first 13 pages or so. I'd recommend to our listeners, go on arpacanada.ca's website and you can find a link to the judgment there. The first 24 paragraphs, beautifully written. That's where he sets the stage for his whole judgment. There are a few wonderful quotes that are quite good, quite powerful. Paragraph 10, for example, he says that the charter is not a blueprint for moral conformity. Its purpose is to protect the citizen from the power of the state, not to enforce compliance by citizens or private institutions with the moral judgments of the state. And that's actually part of the oral argument that we made, ARPA Canada made to the Supreme Court of Nova Scotia. We argued that, in fact, the Charter, the Constitution, it's designed to protect us, the citizens, from the interference of the state, and that to argue otherwise changes the Constitution from this living tree that grows and develops to continue protecting rights into some sort of mutant organism that the state can then use as a sword to impose its moral values on private institutions. And it looks like the judge is picking up on that here.
So what happens next? I mean, Nova Scotia was only one front in this ongoing dispute. There's other provinces that have kind of said similar things. The BC government originally decided to give accreditation to the law school and has since withdrawn it. Ultimately, is this going to wind up before the Supreme Court?
There's a good chance that this is going to the Supreme Court, yes. This judgment is a great start to a long game. Trinity Western scored the first goal, in a sense, and I hope that they continue doing so. In Ontario, the lawsuit will proceed sometime in June. In BC, the lawsuit by Trinity Western against BC's Barrister Society or Law Society has a bunch of motions that they need to deal with at the end of February, and then after that they'll be scheduling a trial and a hearing. So we'll see how those advance. If both of the courts in those jurisdictions also rule in favor of Trinity Western, I think that would be a great indication, and it might cut this game short. The law societies might recognize their error and call it off. But I think it's more likely that at least some of the jurisdictions are going to continue to push for appeals to courts of appeal, and should any court of appeal within those three jurisdictions be in conflict with another, then this definitely has to go to the Supreme Court to get settled.
Now, there is sort of a Supreme Court precedent on this, also with regard to Trinity Western on the education side. BC College of Teachers tried to basically not recognize Trinity's teaching certificates for the same reason, this whole community covenant thing. Supreme Court ruled in favor of Trinity there. What's different between that case and this? I mean, one was regulating teachers, this one's regulating lawyers. Fundamentally, are they the same case, or could the argument be made that these are two totally separate and distinct issues?
Fundamentally, I think they're very much the same case, certainly on the constitutional level. The judge in his judgment, he does draw distinctions between the cases in that jurisdiction analysis. So there are some distinctions, but they're fine points. They're not the big broad strokes that we're talking about here, the points of principle. The judge said in this judgment, similar to what we saw in the judgment from the Supreme Court in 2001, he said that it's hardly a pressing objective for a representative of the state to use the power of the state to compel a legally functioning private institution in another province to change a legal policy in effect there because it reflects a legally held moral stance that offends the NSBS, that is the Nova Scotia Barrister Society, and its members or the public. So again, he emphasizes over and over again that what Trinity Western is doing, it's totally legal. It's totally legal. It's just that they find it, the Barrister Society finds it a bit off-color, off-putting, or maybe a bit offensive. Again, a huge judgment, I think, a huge victory for not only religious freedom, but freedom in general.
Congratulations on this one.
Thank you very much, Al. And thank you so much to all of the ARPA supporters. We give thanks to God that he's blessed this hearing. He's blessed us with a strong ruling and that we've been able to be part of this entire process as a reformed community, thanks to the generous support of our listeners. So big thanks goes to them. And we look forward to where this is going to go in the next months and years.
Thanks, Andre. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Just two programming reminders as we come to an end of this week's show. First of all, again, we want to encourage you to use that new widget on our website. Go to the Lighthouse News webpage and right at the very top, you'll see the Answering Machine link. Click on that, leave us a message or a question specifically about the Carter case. We'll be doing more analysis of that case in 2 weeks. And again, a reminder, starting in March, the program goes to weekly delivery. That means starting March 2nd, every Monday, you'll be getting this delivered to your inbox. Thanks for listening.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Production Manager Brian Grimm, Technical Director Nate Boscher. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the Answering Machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage. Or you can send us an email, info@arpeccanada.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.